The psychic had a curious message for Helena. She said, "You are not who you think you are." That's right at the start of a new book from Jenny Lynch, former well-known journalist and editor of the New Zealand Woman's Weekly. It's a debut novel, although Jenny's written three previous books about her life and times. And it's a debut novel at the age of 85. The Secrets They Kept is the story of a young woman's quest to discover the truth about her mother's unexplained death and her own identity. Helena loses her mum, Eve, at age 3. Eve appears to have died in a terrible accident, but Helena's family are pretty reluctant to provide details, and she suspects there's something else to be revealed, something else that is equally terrible. Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
You like secrets.
I do.
You'd already written Under the Covers, Secrets of a Magazine Editor. As far as I know, you don't have any dark secrets of your own. We all do.
Not too dark. Perhaps the greyish shade.
Yeah, we all have the greyish shade. In this novel, your mother, Evelyn, the book's written with Helena as the narrator, you describe Eve, her mother, as having some of the same qualities as yourself in your earlier life. Because she has been, in the book, an actor, vivacious, glamorous. You have been an actor, a photographic model, a Playboy bunny, in the sense that you worked at an establishment called the Playboy Club in Melbourne. And you also lived in Winnipeg, which Helena does in this book. I hope I haven't confused everybody. As a journalist, which you are. So how much of you is in the mother and daughter in this book?
Well, as far as Helena goes, a little bit of me, particularly in the early years when she fantasizes about the sort of person that her mother might have been, and she puts her in Hollywood as an actress of B-grade movies, which were so B-grade they could only be shown in Sweden.
So B-grade they could only have been shown in Sweden.
That's right.
But you're drawing on your life experience to a great extent.
Absolutely. My life experience and just about 30 years in journalism as well, and you know, at which time I met all sorts of exciting and interesting people. So little bits and pieces of all those people turn up in my book.
So they all welled up over the years and then began to simmer, and you thought, I've got to write a first novel.
I did, yeah. I did.
I have to skirt around major revelations in the novel.
Which is difficult, I know.
Yeah, it is really. The family is religious, so Helena, your protagonist, bears the legacy of that, as anyone brought up in religious households does. But far more central to the plot is something you could call religious, but most people would call supernatural, because it's a long way from the religions most people listening may have experienced. How much do you want to tell us about how and why Helena's mum meets her tragic end?
I can't really tell you anything much about that, because that would be giving too much away. I can tell you the inspiration for the book, and that is, years ago when I was about 15, my grandmother told me a story about a far-off relative who met her death in a particularly tragic way. I did write about it as a kind of a short story. Then one day, quite out of the blue, the entire plot of this book just came to me in my head.
Really?
It
bang.
Did. Bang.
Were you outside when it came to you? Because they say never trust a thought you haven't had outside.
Oh, and that's a good idea.
And walking often produces these kinds of revelations rather than sitting
in a
room.
I can't remember exactly, but I think I might have been inside. We had, at the time, a very huge workplace with lots of windows and so forth. And so I was very close to nature.
Oh, it could have been that. Mm-hmm. So this is a book about a daughter trying to find out what happened to her mother.
That's right. That's
which is intriguing. And you don't find out right until the end. But along the way, the daughter gets hypnotized.
She does.
Which has an impressive and chilling effect initially. I know you're drawing upon your own real-life interviews with hypnotists and psychics.
I am.
Rather than any views of your own. But they seem to have made quite an impression on you all the same.
They certainly did. And I can remember very clearly my experience with a hypnotist who specialised in hypnotic regression back to past lives. And it was an exhausting experience. It really was, and a frightening experience. And part of that appears in the book, but it's taken to a whole new level.
See, I've got a lot of scepticism in me, as I know you have in mm-hmm. you. But I once saw a psychic for professional reasons, and she did come out with something utterly surprising, which turned out to be true. And that hasn't made me a believer, but it certainly made me scratch my head. You know, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than I dreamed of your...
Oh, absolutely. Your,
so what's your own position on that?
Well, I've got an open mind, but I firmly believe that there is more to existence than what we can perceive in our normal senses. Mm-hmm. Even if you think on a physical level of cats and dogs and other animals, who can hear and smell and far better than we can. That's just on a purely physical level. So I think it's very arrogant of people to think that just what they can perceive with their ordinary senses is the beginning and the end of everything.
Yeah, I think many of us would probably agree with you. You chatted with Catherine Ryan a few years back on your magazine career, which is a conversation readily available online.
Really?
I don't need to cover that ground. Yes, that's you're internationally famous. I am a bit interested in your time in Melbourne because we talked recently to Hugh Hefner's widow, Crystal Hefner.
Oh, yes.
And she described the pathetic reality behind the glamour of the Playboy masthead. What effect did your stint at the Playboy Club have on you and your life outlook, do you think?
Well, it wasn't actually the Playboy Club. It was called the Playboy because if it had been called a club, Hugh Hefner's lawyers would have been down on us, you know,
right,
very heavily indeed.
Right.
It was very strange what it did to me because the atmosphere there was quite different from what I'd ever experienced and what I ever thought I would experience. I mean, one of my first experiences when I went there, I opened a door of a cupboard and here were a couple very heavily engaged inside. And
right.
So that gives you an idea of the general sort of feeling about the place. But the extraordinary thing is that you can sort of become used to things like that and you can sort of... accept them as part of life. And it wasn't till after I left the club, left the place after 6 months and reviewed what I'd experienced there that I thought, oh my God, how the hell could I have stayed there so long? It was run by a crook.
Yes, he was involved in horse racing.
He was. He put out this tipping sheet, which he wasn't supposed to do, and he signed it Doc McKenzie's Wonder System, but he wasn't game to sign his own name on it. So I signed Doc McKenzie.
It was your job.
It was part of my job.
Oh, you were the mother bunny.
Well, I wasn't actually a bunny
weren't a bunny, but you're in charge of the bunnies.
Well, sort of.
Right.
If a difficult situation came up with the bunny, they called on me to sort of deal with it.
Right.
And I was told I had to fire this particular bunny. And I said to her, I'm sorry, but you're fired. And she said, I'm not fired. And I said, I'm sorry, I've told you that you're fired. And she said, that you can tell me I'm fired, but I'm not fired. And she wobbled off in her high-heeled shoes, and that was the end of it. And the boss said to me, did you fire her? And I said, I tried, but I failed. And he said, oh, well, never mind.
So it gave you a deep insight into the way that human beings can become inured to certain circumstances.
Yes, and, you've got that right.
And
absolutely.
Maybe get brainwashed and maybe be in all sorts of places like cults and come to think of it as acceptable.
Absolutely, yeah. You do. You come to think of that sort of thing as acceptable. And in the end, the boss said he wanted to fix me up with a friend of his, and I knew what fix me up meant. And I said, no way, and that was the end of it.
You're gone. The secrets they kept, Jenny Lynch. We've seen the diminution of the importance of our own big magazines and women's titles seem to be surviving, but others have become minor media players now, and of course News Hub has gone. What do you see as the future for mainstream media magazines now?
Oh, well, that's such a hard one because, you know, magazines all depend on advertising.
Yeah.
I've been looking at some beautiful magazines and they don't have as much advertising as I thought they should be to be viable.
Right.
In the old days of the Woman's Weekly, in its heyday, which was, I would say, the early 80s, was 50-50 advertising editorial ratio. It was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, you know, it was said that the saleswomen only had to sit by their phones and the ads would just roll in. They didn't have to do a damn thing.
And yet magazines now, they've never looked nicer in some respects. The quality.
There's some beautiful ones.
I know.
Beautiful ones.
Seems very sad to think they're all about to teeter, or at least that they're teetering and perhaps about to totter off.
Or going from weeklies to monthlies and then to sort of
quarterlies.
Quarterlies or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly don't know. I hope very much that magazines will survive. I mean, like books, I mean, it's a tactile thing to have a book. And that's part of the pleasure of reading a book is turning the pages and so forth. And it's the same thing with a magazine.
Yeah, it's true.
Turning the pages and sort of entering into the lives of the people who are portrayed on those pages.
Yeah, which they're very good at. So maybe that'll tide them over. Maybe
that'll
see the best ones through. The Secrets They Kept is the debut novel by Jenny Lynch, who's with us. You never wanted to be editor of the New Zealand Woman's Weekly. You had greatness thrust upon you, really, didn't you?
Well, greatness. Well, I suppose you could say at that particular time, yes, I did. I never wanted to be editor, and I applied at the very last minute because I saw a lineup of possible editors whom I thought would be absolutely ghastly for the magazine, and so I applied and eventually got it, and it was a challenge. 2 years later, two very large and influential Australian magazines appeared on the market, and they thrived on gossip, glitz and glamour. And at first I thought they wouldn't be much of a competitor for us, but I was entirely wrong, and I found that New Zealand readers had an appetite for gossip, glitz and glamour, so yeah. I had to change the weekly's focus
a little bit. In a more dignified way that compared with today.
Yes, I think so, yes.
The gossip, glitz and glamour, what do you think click culture has done to media, even the big players like Stuff and the Herald, you see it. What do you think it does to media? Is there anything wrong with it, or does it somehow lower the tone?
Oh, it demeans media. It demeans it, really. I mean, stories should be published on the basis of they are a damn good story. Something on a screen, which they have in newsrooms now, tells you what is trending and what isn't trending.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very sad thing, almost as sad as, checkbook journalism, which came in my time too, and which I hated.
Yeah, but you couldn't resist that trend.
Oh, we couldn't.
No.
We couldn't, even though our checkbooks were far, far slimmer and unlikely to open as widely as those of our competitors.
There's a lesson, when you took over, there's a lesson to be learned in how quickly you change media too, isn't there?
Yes, yes.
Take the audience with you.
Yes, that's right.
I suppose people come in and they like to create their own empires, don't they?
They do, and they like to bring their own ideas and perceptions, et cetera, into it.
This is a difficult question, but I mean, greed would seem to have changed media just as it's changed society. Stakeholders got to be catered to. Shareholders, it seems, have to be more and more rewarded. It kind of trickles down from the top to the bottom. Is there an end game? Because you would think it's a process that requires an end.
An end to greed.
Well, I suppose that sounds silly when you rephrase it and throw it back.
I'm sorry. No.
No, you're right, though. Well, no.
I don't think there's ever going to be an end to greed.
A reduction in that fierce need for increasing profit all the time, I suppose.
Well, yes, and also to keep people employed.
Unsolvable from where we sit.
Unsolvable.
There's a huge amount of regret in this first novel of yours, shocking regret. In your own life, you've had a few. I Had an Alien's Baby was an example I heard you mention of a story that you ran. You're very knowledgeable on fashion. What effect do you think this has had on society, the change in fashion?
Well, it worries me in a way because discipline seems to be not something that is valued any longer. And there is such a lack of discipline in behaviour of people. And also, I think, in the things that they wear. You know, you can go into just a regular coffee shop, and you can find chaps there just in old T-shirts and shorts and singlets even, which I think is ghastly, showing underarm hair over your table. And I think that if the owners of the cafe said, sorry, you can't come in, you're not dressed well enough, you know, they'd be told, I have my rights, I can dress as I like, which I think is awful.
Yeah, they'd go on social media, and then the mainstream media would pick up what's said on social media and nip around to the shop.
Yes. No, I think there's a lack of discipline and in behaviour, and also in the way that we dress, which I think is rather sad, really.
Now that you have the bit between your teeth, there are more novels to come?
No,
this is it.
This isn't it as far as fiction goes, because I've written the first drafts of about 30 short stories.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to go through those and have a look at them. They're all tales of the unexpected, much sort of along the themes here. So we'll see what happens with those. But I'm in no hurry. No hurry to work on them just at the moment.
The secrets they kept. You know, we live in an age of incredible self-revelation thanks to social media, most of it trivial and sometimes tiresome. Secrets are much more interesting than laying your life bare, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And people used to have far more secrets than they have today. You know, my family itself had some terrible secrets, which I didn't find out until I was an adult. And I suspect all families have those secrets. But nowadays, I think people talk more openly about themselves and the people that they associate with.
I wonder if it's healthy or who knows.
I don't know.
It's seemingly healthy, isn't it? Get it
seemingly,
off your chest.
Seemingly yeah. Healthy.
Secrets are interesting, though, when you find them out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without secrets, where would fiction be, actually?
Well, the daughter in this novel is very determined to uncover the secret, and she does.
She does, eventually. And then, of course, there's the final twist, which I'm hoping no reader will expect.
I can't even go near that, can I?
No.
I can't go near it. Jenny Lynch, lovely talking to you about the old times and about the new times, the new book. Good luck with it.
Oh, thank you very much. I've enjoyed very much talking with you.